Welcome to the Anesthesiology Journal podcast, an audio interview of study authors and editorialists.
Hello, I'm Jim Rathmill, professor of anesthesia at Harvard Medical School and chair of the Department of Anesthesiology, Perioperative and Pain Medicine at Brigham and Women's Hospital. I'm one of the executive editors for Anesthesiology, and you're listening to an anesthesiology podcast that we've designed for physicians and scientists interested in the research that appears in the journal. Today, we're going to talk with one of the authors of an original research article and the author of an accompanying editorial that appeared in the November 2021 issue. With us today is Dr. Avery Tung. Dr. Tung is professor of anesthesia and critical care and director of critical care services at the University of Chicago in Chicago, Illinois. Dr. Tung is one of the authors on an article that appears in the November 2021 issue of the journal, and it's titled, December is Coming, a Time Trend Analysis of Monthly Variation in Adult Elective Anesthesia Caseload Across Florida and Texas Locations of a Large Multi-State Practice. Dr. Tung, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Jim and Warren. Thanks for being interested in our work and for having me on this call.
We also have with us today Dr. Warren Sandberg. Dr. Sandberg is chairperson of the Department of Anesthesiology, professor in the Departments of Anesthesiology, Surgery, and Biomedical Informatics, and chief of staff at Vanderbilt University Adult Hospital in Nashville, Tennessee. Dr. Sandberg authored an editorial that accompanies Dr. Tung's original research article in the November 2021 issue of the journal, and it's titled, December is for Congregation, Celebration, Operation, Recuperation. Dr. Sandberg, thank you and welcome.
Hi, Jim and Avery. It's great to talk with you again, and thanks for pulling us together, Jim. It's great to be here.
Dr. Tung, congratulations on the publication of your study. Let's start by setting the stage for listeners. Publications in the existing literature have not demonstrated an association between month of year and anesthesia case volume. But we know that high-deductible health insurance plans are increasingly common in the United States. The U set out to re-examine elective caseloads in various months of the year. What was the hypothesis of your study, and why did you choose to study this?
Thanks, Jim. Specifically, we hypothesized that daily caseloads at USAP practices in Texas and Florida were higher in December than in other months. This project actually started as a confluence of three events. The first was a routine late summer meeting of our department to discuss December staffing, restricted vacations, and limited non-clinical time in December, in part due to the anticipation that daily volumes in December would be higher in other months. That led David Glick, who's the last author in this paper, and myself to wonder whether that assumption had any evidentiary basis. A quick review of the literature suggested not just the absence of evidence, but evidence of absence, that is, two papers spanning 20 years finding no December bump. The second was our existing familiarity with a large and remarkably complete database managed by Rick Dutton, who is the chief quality officer for USAP, a large private group in the southern United States. Rick was and is a strong proponent of high-quality large data sets as a way of analyzing anesthesia practice and had helped us with an analysis of 50,000 patient satisfaction surveys we published last year in ANA. So we reached out to him to see whether his data might help us answer this question. For full disclosure, Rick, David, and I were all pre-hoc believers in the December bump. That is to say that there would be more cases in December. The final piece was the impressive set of initial analyses done by Anastasia Pearsa, who had been a medical student at Pritzker and was completing her MBA at Booth at Chicago at the time that she helped us with this study. She's the official first author, is now an intern at MGH, you know, and is going into anesthesia at MGH, her residency to start next year. Ms. Pearsa had impressive large database skills, and given her interest in health policy, suggested that if a bump did exist, one of the more interesting questions would be why. In the paper, we suggest several possibilities, the timing of insurance deductibles among them. All are potential material, we think, for future studies.
So I love it. Just a question amongst colleagues leads to an in-depth analysis. Fantastic. So how did you conduct the study, and more specifically, can you explain how you applied what's called time trend decomposition analysis in the study?
That's a great question, and it highlights the outstanding editorial job done by anesthesiology and by the editor who handled our paper, Dr. Ketterpal, to help our publication see the light of day. In fact, I think we submitted the first version of our paper almost a year ago in September of 2020. At that time, we started with a year's worth of data, 2018, and a simple comparison of December caseloads versus an average of all the other 11 months. But we sent that in, and reviewers rightly noted, you know, when the paper came back, that a single year was more anecdote than data, and requested that we analyze several years to verify that our findings were reproducible across years. And when we did so, we found that the December effect we saw in 2018 was reproduced in 2017 and 2019, so we had three consecutive years, but that all three effects, if you will, were set against a background of steadily rising case volumes throughout the three-year period. And that's figure one in the paper for those who are looking at it online. So although we could visualize that something was happening in December, and that's very clear from the graphic, the statistical question then became for us, how could we test whether the December increase was more significant than, say, April versus March, you know, or August versus July? And it was Sajid Shahul, the statistician on our paper, professor in our department, who found our answer in time trend decomposition, which is an approach often used to analyze weather patterns for seasonality, as it turns out. He essentially deconstructed the raw case curve into an underlying upward trend and a recurring December versus other month signal, and then tested the significance of that recurring December signal. The end result, I have to say, is much more persuasive than what we started with, and we think suggests some fascinating hypotheses for future work.
So you analyzed an impressive total of 3,504,394 adult cases, and they were all included in this analysis. What'd you find?
Well, first, that's one of the most interesting underlying stories of this paper, and I'll come back to it at the end, is the remarkable completeness of the USAP data set. Out of more than 3 million cases, we excluded only 25 from missing data. In fact, I remember asking both Rick and Anastasia several times if they hadn't forgotten a zero or two or even three zeros in the missing data count. I'm like, is there only 25 really? In a nutshell, we found that after adjusting for practice location, setting, and time trend, that elective December daily case volumes were about 20% higher, you know, over each year is roughly 20%, than the January-November baseline in all 3 years we studied. We also found that the December bump was considerably more prominent in younger patients, those less than 65, and those who are commercially insured versus those who are, supported by government pay insurance. We performed several exploratory analyses that we include in the paper and supplementary material that I'll mention for purposes of future hypothesis testing. When we included non-elective cases, weekend, holiday, and obstetric cases that you really couldn't schedule, we found a smaller increase, roughly 5%, you know, in each year. And when we compared monthly caseloads for procedures less or more likely to be elective, for example, CABG versus colonoscopy, we found a larger December effect for colonoscopy than for CABG. Finally, when we analyzed January caseloads, we found a between 6 and 15% dip in January versus all other months of the year.
So I want to follow up on that. It's interesting. So when you put the non-elective cases back in, it actually decreased that December bump. It suggests that non-elective volume goes down when elective volume goes up. Can you expand on that?
Either that, or it may mean that that there is, it sort of swamps out the effect of the December bump a little bit, depending on how many non-elective cases there are. Our data set wasn't clear enough to try to dig into exactly why and how that happened. But for purposes of the operational significance of this bump, it suggests that there's an elective effect which is bigger than the overall effect.
So what did you conclude from your study?
We believe that we uncovered empiric evidence for what many anesthesiologists anecdotally believe, that we do more elective cases per day in December than in other months. And anticipating that increased caseload is a reasonable concern for anesthesia departments planning their staffing. That the December bump is greater in younger patients and commercially insured patients may help inform future work on possible mechanism. You know, when I ask colleagues, why do you think that elective caseloads are higher in December? I first ask them, do you think so? They all say yes. And then I say, why? And they say the number one reason I get back is the timing of insurance deductible. They say because they've used up their deductible by December, so, you know, the procedure is more free, I guess, economically than it would be otherwise. But such a hypothesis deserves an empiric test and actually might be possible in the right insurance market. Our findings also highlight the growing possibilities of large data sets. As technology makes it easier and easier to capture data, the completeness and quality of that data, we think, is also improving. You know, and such higher quality data sets may allow us to more closely analyze complex time trends like the one in our study. I say I'm the quality chief for our department, and I have been impressed at the accuracy of the MPOG, that is the multi-specialty perioperative outcomes group data, that reports back to our hospital. If that MPOG report says that, you know, Avery didn't give reversal after use of a non-depolarizing neuromuscular blocker, it is very likely that I did not. Finally, I'd say that even though our empiric test of what everybody already knows to be true was confirmatory, and some people might then argue it didn't need to be done, it was a waste of effort, that the specific dimensions of that empiric test are fascinating. To name a few questions, why do our data differ from what's previously been shown in other studies? Does this same effect exist in academic departments? And if not, is there any difference in the magnitude or the timing of it? In other parts of the country besides Florida and Texas, in other branches of medicine? By the way, I note that although our data set ended in 2019 and COVID distorted 2020 data, we couldn't help looking. So we did look at December 2020, and we saw a bump there also. And I know our department, and I know that Rick also is planning for a December bump in 2021.
Dr. Sandberg, I want to turn to your editorial. Again, it also appears in the November 2021 issue, and it's titled, December is for Congregation, Celebration, Operation, Recuperation. You do a terrific job of putting Dr. Tung's article into perspective. While it might seem obvious, can you start by telling us why case volume variation is important to people like you and I who run large anesthesiology departments?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. Thanks again for the invitation. I want to point out the important distinction between a 20% jump in volume and a 5% jump in volume, both analyses which appeared in the paper Dr. Tung is discussing. As we run a business which depends on tighter and tighter margin, our most expensive input, that is labor, becomes more and more tightly managed. And so we basically staff now in my department to basically land the year within 1% of our total staffing budget. So if I have not anticipated a 20% demand shock, I couldn't actually accommodate that with the available labor I had without really doing some pretty horrible things to people. And Dr. Tung alluded to that and the planning that goes into that when he talked about the genesis of his paper. And I think in a 20% demand shock, you'd really want to know what was coming. I think the important number to focus on is the 5% change in volumes, which I think many departments accommodate on a week-to-week or month-to-month basis. Even so, a sustained increase in demand for the entire month of December is taxing for an anesthesia department. And departments like mine definitely plan to anticipate those. And Avery, I'll answer your question anecdotally, as I think you already know as well. The December bump is a reality in academic departments, as are the January doldrums. And the inverse hypothesis is speculated to explain the January doldrums. That is, it's a new deductible year, and people are in shock at the price of having an elective procedure done, and they just run down their deductible over the course of the year on small spending, and suddenly they find themselves at the risk of losing a windfall at the end of the year.
This December bump in surgical volume has been around for a long time, hasn't it? Is it more important in today's practices than it was historically?
I don't know whether it's more important than it has been historically. I remember the December bump as one of the features of my first year as an anesthesiology resident in 1995. And anecdotally, my mom remembers being busy as a pathology resident in the 1970s in December because people were getting surgery done then. Certainly high deductible insurance plans are a newer construct than that. And it made me think about what are some of the other reasons that people might prefer to get surgery done in December if it's something that they can schedule. I'm not surprised that there are disagreements over the observation of the December bump in the literature, and I think that it's not inconsistent to have that December bump observed in some environments and not others, as Dr. Tung has alluded to. I think it's been with us the whole time. It may be more important now because more and more people are underemployed and underbenefited. And similarly, in anesthesiology and hospitals, margins are tighter. And so we really have to match the supply of labor and the demand more carefully to avoid basically running off the rails.
So we've talked about high deductible payments on modern commercial health insurance plans. What else might be driving the December bump?
Well, I mean, the high deductible one is definitely an argument that has got a lot of legs to it. But when you think about things that come together in December, families come together. It's a short break for people who still have benefits in their employment programs. They might actually have some discretionary time off during December. For people who are not particularly well employed, there might actually be some risk of losing a job if their employer knows about them leaving the workplace for a little while to have an operation. So if you could string together a couple holidays and a couple vacation days, you might not need to reveal to your employer that you're having an operation. And you've got available family who might be able to also take some time off from work to help you recuperate. So I think that those social factors have to be considered as possible drivers of the December surge.
You talk about the importance of this to the patient. So can you talk us through what this December bump might mean for our patients and how we should respond as anesthesiologists when we're caring for them?
When I started in my current position as chair in 2010, we were in the depths of the Great Recession. And one day I canceled a case, and the patient was really upset. And they explained to me many of the social factors that I just explained. But they were quite concerned that they would lose their job over this cancellation. And it happened to be late in the year, and they explained to me that if they lost their job or if their benefits changed, they may not be able to have an operation next year. So as much as we need to be careful to make sure that we are physiologically and organizationally safe on behalf of the patients, that is, don't take unnecessary risk, I think that for patients coming who've made all these arrangements to have an operation at the holidays, it's important to probe, if you're thinking of canceling a case, for example, what's the consequence to the patient in addition to the physiologic one or the risk one of coming around for another try maybe after the beginning of the year to this patient. I know it seems a little incongruous to focus on this particular notion of cancellation of cases, but it actually has more to do in my mind with the larger well-being impact for a patient to have a medical procedure planned and have those plans changed and the rippling impact of that on the rest of their lives. And I think that it's important to us as anesthesiologists to attend to that and plan to be able to get a patient through their operation if they need it.
You quote David Chestnut, who talks about how valuable just a few moments spent probing what's important to the patient can be in the relationship. Dr. Tung, tell us what comes next for you and your research group.
What we think is the most interesting aspect of this paper, you know, and when you weld it to the hypothesis of what might be happening, you know, you think that's interesting, which is that people might schedule elective surgery based on economic incentives to do so at a certain time. You know, it's what everybody thinks. It's what, when you ask anesthesiologists, they say, oh, I know exactly why the December bump happens. It's because deductibles are paid. In principle, that's a modifiable risk factor. That's testable. It's possible to have deductibles sort of renew at different times of year and then look to see whether that affects the December bump, or maybe that you could move the December bump into another month, you know, by resetting the renewal time. But that would require a study that, you know, we're really not sort of geared up to do. We don't have the power to change something like that. That's very, very big. In our own little group, you know, we think maybe the next move would be to go back to the origins of this study and ask ourselves, okay, so, you know, you've staffed differently for December based on the bump that you anticipate. You know, how do you do that? You know, do you just run later, as reviewers suggested to us might be the predominant method? Do you, you know, schedule part-time providers? Do you hire locums providers? Do you call back in semi-retired providers back to help cover the extra? And, of course, you restrict vacation, run cases later into the evening, open additional locations, et cetera. Rick told us that at USAP, they you know, anticipate this bump. They have a number of measures, and those include a mixture of all the ones I've named, and we put all of those in our paper as possibilities for why that might happen. We think it'd be very interesting to see how departments adjust to it and what factors cause them to decide to do one or another thing. We also note that a December bump may affect not only perioperative services, but also hospital utilization down the line, so other branches of medicine besides anesthesia may also be interested in a deductible effect if it does exist.
Terrific explanation. I hope today's discussion will lead many of you listening to read this new article that appears in the November 2021 issue of Anesthesiology, where you can learn more about December case volume variation and its implication for anesthesiologists. Dr. Stung and Sandberg, thank you for joining me today and for the terrific explanations.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
You've been listening to the Anesthesiology Journal Podcast, the official peer-reviewed journal of the American Society of Anesthesiologists. Check anesthesiology.org for an archive of this podcast and other related content.